Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to another episode of Rogue Startups. This week, I'm joined by Ruben Gomez of both BidSketch and DocSketch. In this episode, Ruben and I talk about a lot of marketing stuff, running two companies and brands and products at once, and how he looks at marketing attribution. Ruben is a really kind of thoughtful and intentional founder, and I really enjoy talking to him. He was a Tiny Seed mentor, and we chatted a couple of times during our stint in Tiny Seed, and it's great to catch up with him here in the episode today. Hope you enjoy this chat with Ruben Gomez from BidSketch and DocSketch.
Ruben, welcome to the show, man. Nice to have you.
Hey, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I know we've been chatting off and on with you as like a Tiny Seed advisor and in like a Slack group that we're in, and it's nice to be able to catch up here on the podcast. I thought today we would, I'd love to kind of catch up on what you're doing with your businesses. I know you have two of them, and I'd love to kind of dig into that balance a little bit, and then I think probably talk a fair amount of marketing, if that works for you.
Yep, that's good. Yeah, working on both businesses, but really mostly on one, on DocSketch, which is the newer one.
Yeah. So I know BidSketch is something you ran for quite some time now. How many years has it been around?
It's been around a little over 10 years now. So it's super old and, in the SaaS space.
Right. But then DocSketch is just a couple of years old, and you're kind of just recently come out of like invite beta and stuff, right?
Yeah, well, it launched about a year ago. Actually, it would have launched later, but I was doing an AppSumo deal, and they didn't want me to do it, in early access mode. They wanted me to launch it, so I had to do that.
Cool. How was your experience with AppSumo?
It was good. It was great for us. I did two of those with BidSketch. And that was years ago. With DocSketch, we just did one to launch, and we got a lot of traffic. We got good sales, some good customers, actually. It's very different types of customers than we did with BidSketch, which was super useful. A lot of people using, because DocSketch is an electronic signature tool, a lot of people were using other electronic signature tools, super crowded market, right? Like DocuSign and Adobe Sign and stuff. And what was nice about that is that the feedback that we got was from people that had been using tools, paying for those other tools, and they were highly motivated to move off of them because they got a great deal on something. But it was much easier to segment the feedback and know that it was good, right? Because these were actual customers, small teams and stuff like that. They were already using something.
How do you balance, or how did you balance getting a bunch of feedback at once from an acquisition source that you can't kind of replicate over time on a new product? Because I think that's like one of the most dangerous things when you get a bunch of feedback on what people like and don't like on a new product from, I'll say sources you don't trust, but that's not the right term, but from sources that maybe aren't as genuine as you think you might get later on, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, I ignore anything that's coming from a source that's not going to be the target customer. So that's why I said that it was super useful, because it was easy to segment out the real customers, the people that would closely match what we were going after. And that was because these were people that were already paying for something and oftentimes had small teams on it. So they were paying, they weren't paying like $10 a month or something like that, though we do have a $10 a month plan. So it was, I wasn't worried about that because it was so easy to identify the real customer. And a lot of these were like small business offices and stuff like that, So it's just different than like a typical, you know, you'll get a good chunk. And we still got this with AppSumo, like freelancers and stuff like that. But the amount of documents that they send, the volume is low, right? So that was another thing that we're paying attention to, because if it's going to be feedback coming in from somebody that just sends a couple of documents in a month, and then they might go a few months without sending a cup, that feedback's not that useful, right? They're not the target customer.
Yeah.
So they're not going to find a lot of value in the tool.
Interesting. Interesting. I've heard AppSumo referred to as kind of a nice way to kind of get a mini funding round. Did you guys kind of get enough revenue to have it be impactful, or was it not a huge kind of chunk of change?
It was okay. I wasn't even thinking about the money. I didn't even do it for the money. So I did it for other reasons, mainly a few reasons. For number one, for the feedback, like I said, because I knew some of it was going to be good. I was surprised at how much of it was really good. So that turned out to be nicer than I thought. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that when I've done AppSumo deals in the past, there are a lot of branded searches and a lot of activity. There's a lot of activity around your brand during that time. And we have always had stuff going on the content marketing SEO side. And that just helps all of that.
Yeah.
Especially launched a free tool around that time. And it was really, really useful to have some of that going on. There's word of mouth that happens. It's really good. In the past with BitSketch, it didn't happen this time. Maybe because with DocSketch, it's a free, you know, we do freemium with BitSketch, credit card up front. So it's a sort of a different sort of model. But we, in the past for BitSketch, we also just got a lot of people who bought the product outside of the deal as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that too. They get a bump in organic sales when you're on AppSumo. So that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So there were a lot of good things that came with it. There was a lot of support. There was a lot of I had to hire an extra support person, just a temporary support person to help out and train them up really quick before that happened. And they're basically, the way that I thought of them is like a freemium user. Any AppSumo user that came in. So that's why I was okay with just having somebody pay a one-time fee and use a product, because we have a viral component to the product. People send out documents. Mm-hmm. They see that they're using DocSketch. So there are a few, angles to it. The cost to serve a user is not that high. Some products, the cost to serve or support a user is really high, and it's not a good fit.
We've been approached by AppSumo a couple of times for Castos, and I just don't think that we could do it, because potentially the cost to serve a customer for us could be very high, and I don't think AppSumo would go for like a lifetime deal with some kind of fixed amount of bandwidth or downloads or something, because that's just not really what they do, I don't think. So yeah, for us, I don't think it would be an option. But it's a fascinating model, especially for early stage products, I think.
Yeah, for the right ones. And if you're okay with doing freemium and having freemium users, that's basically what they are. Just think of them in that way. And then, but you get a little bit of cash. We ended up with $40,000 from it.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's not nothing, right? I mean, that's a half a developer salary or something. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, nice. Most of your time is with DocSketch these days. And I know you've talked about kind of the reason to start DocSketch and stuff on like a Startups for the Rest of Us episode a while back, but kind of maybe just like the Cliff Notes version to get folks who haven't heard that kind of up to speed on, why transfer some of your energy and focus over from an existing successful business in BitSketch over to a new app in a crowded space, like you're saying. Arguably, I guess it has more market cap, or like higher market cap or a total addressable market or something. But I'd love to hear kind of why make that switch and kind of like what that process was like up to this point.
Sure. So basically, it was the next thing. We were getting people asking us to build electronic signature functionality into Bitsketch, which we did, and it's kind of standard in the proposal category, but it's very simple. It's a very simple version of it, and we integrated with other e-signature tools for you know, workflows that were a little bit more complex, and for people that actually use those tools to upload and, you know, send up other things that aren't proposals, right? We were just getting more and more feedback asking us to, because seemingly there's a ton of overlap between the two types of products. They do a lot of the same things, except that one category you create the documents, and then the other you upload the documents. So people were asking us to just like add the upload stuff and, you know, enhance the e-signature workflows and make it more of an e-signature tool as well. So I started taking a look at the market, and I liked what I saw there. A couple of them were using freemium. It was very big. There was some overlap with our existing product. And I just felt like it would be a good next thing at that point.
Did you look at like the kind of technical and user experience aspect of the competition and say like, well, a lot of these tools suck, I think we could do this better? Or was that not part of the equation for you?
A little bit. Ideally, you'd go in there and you'd see a lot of tools that a lot of tools do suck and people aren't that happy with them and stuff. So there was a lot of research put into what do people like and what don't they like in that category. I did jobs to be done interviews with people that were doing that had signed up and paid for DocuSign or HelloSign customers. Those were some of the two that I focused on. Checked out review sites, categorized like feed, you know, what people put had on there on the reviews for positives and negatives. And like any category, there were things that people didn't like, things that some opportunities, but it wasn't full of just, you know, these apps are just a bunch of dinosaurs and they're doing everything poorly or anything like that. Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was not that sort of a situation. So I knew that I would have to basically have some sort of advantage, some way to get customers, especially in something that was really crowded. So the other part of the research was just, can we own a channel? Can we do really well in here? Because we just have a good source of traffic, leads, and signups that others don't. So did some research on that side. I felt like we could. And, you know, started it.
I know, like, without kind of giving away the secret sauce of like customer acquisition and stuff, I'd love to kind of talk more about marketing and kind of like what you guys thought about as you were getting started as far as like a marketing strategy and maybe like how that's playing out. And I ask because our approach is very different than I thought it would be a year ago when Denise joined our team. I thought it would be a lot of paid acquisition and a little bit of content, and that we do a little bit of paid acquisition and a lot of content now. So I think it's kind of flipped on its head. So I'd love to hear kind of like, as you formed that hypothesis for like owning a channel or what that channel might be, how you kind of went in and explored and started kind of building out that space as far as like customer acquisition and kind of how that process went in terms of kind of being successful.
Sure. So first of all, because we had a lot of apps in the category, it was just about taking a look at what are they doing right now to get customers that's working for them. And there was some content marketing and stuff focused on the SEO side, but they weren't that good at it. You know,
interesting. Those are big companies to not be so good at it.
Yeah. I mean, they rank well, they get traffic, but, the content out there for, you know, the keywords that they're targeting and stuff, it's not that good. a lot of it was brand, which is really tough to compete with. So, depending on how you're trying to compete with the products. So a lot of it was just like a lot of people getting branded searches and enterprise deals and, you know, getting customers in that way. So I looked at content marketing. That it wasn't wide open because everybody was ranking for all the obvious stuff and easy stuff. But there was enough volume so that it was obvious that if we put in a good effort and outranked some of these companies and got some of this traffic, that we could build a nice business. It started really with just doing the same thing, kind of analyzing the competition and looking at it that way, figuring out what the opportunities were, and then from there getting a list of keywords of thing, you know, content tools and things that we could build out, templates. And then trying to figure out, okay, what's most likely going to work to get signups and customers initially? Because you have a lot of content that you can write or create that will focus on, especially if you're doing something like SEO, right? And it's going to be intent based, that can get you the right type of person as a visitor on your website or as a lead on an email list, but the alignment can be wrong with your product. It can be just off a little bit.
Yeah, where they are in the buying journey,
exactly.
Customer personas. Yeah, 100%. Totally.
And that matters a ton. So it can be a lot of work to finally rank for something and then only to find out that, all right, this isn't going to be all that useful. Yeah. So there, you know, like bottom, I think Christopher, from Snappa, did a really good job of, laying out their content marketing strategy when he was on here. Very similar strategy for content marketing. We followed, we just, we added like a tool was part of it as well. Not just blog posts, so I like to look at all sorts of different content and templates, but the alignment on the templates is different. And we didn't find that out till later, so that one's going to take more work than some of the others that we're doing.
No, it's super interesting. I think I learned this like the long and slow and hard way at Podcast Motor. Is we wrote a lot of content for, I'll say like amateur podcasters, which are very much not our persona at Podcast Motor. You know, we have services that are $200 to $1,000 a month. And, you know, the guy in his basement talking about the Green Bay Packers is not going to spend that on getting his podcast edited and produced. And so at this point, I don't know how much more content we're going to write on that site. Like the site has good domain authority and ranks really well for a lot of these keywords that I don't think we ever got a customer from.
Really?
But the thing that it does, like indirectly, is like having articles that rank well gives your domain as a whole really good authority. And then you can rank for like whatever you want to rank for on your homepage. You know, for us, it's like a podcast editing service is like the thing that we want to rank for. And so we rank really well for it, I think, just because we have a lot of high ranking blog posts. For
more of the bottom of the funnel stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Even though, like, I don't think those blog posts drive a lot of traffic, they just support the rest of the site what our higher intent, like higher buyer intent search terms and kind of traffic is. So, I think that it's funny how, to me, like, and I, you know, of course I learned this over years. It's funny to see how like a lot of traffic doesn't really matter, I think is what you're saying. Like a lot of traffic to your site, people are never going to get on an email list and certainly never going to buy, but that's okay. If it helps like your main purpose in other ways.
If it serves a purpose. Yeah. I took a look at the traffic that you guys are getting and you're doing pretty well with on that side, on the content side. So it's interesting to hear you say that. I would have thought that some of the key terms that you have seem to have good alignment, but oftentimes you find out later it's like, there's something a little bit off about this. Mm-hmm. And it's funny how how often, like if you really, really, really look at when you ask people, how do you get customers? And they say, oh, content marketing. It's funny how, like, when you dig in, and I've done this a lot with a lot of different founders. And they're like, yeah, the blog, blah, blah, blah. And, okay. So, what do you use for analytics and can you track that? And is it showing? Almost always it's no. So like there's no proof, like there's such a huge percentage of the people that say that they're growing off of content marketing that have no proof that they're growing off of content marketing. There's mm-hmm. nothing that really shows that they're, you know, the blog is basically bringing them customers, not truly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we look at Castos, we look at, because it's funny, both Denise and I are like kind of left brain marketers, and we have this spreadsheet that auto updates and pulls in from Google Analytics, and we look at it a lot. And we look at some kind of site wide metrics, traffic, new trials, new paying customers. But then we also have like a list of our top 10 maybe blog posts that start trials, you know, people that land on that blog post and then start a trial. And we just want those numbers to be going up every month too. And like, it's not super scientific, but for kind of a easy pass, I think that's a good indication. Like if traffic is up and the new trials from these kind of high buyer intent blog posts are up, then we're going in the right direction. And we can say that's as good as we want to measure for now.
And I bet you most, if you put the traffic and signups that most people get from their blog on a spreadsheet like that, it's going to be very similar. It's just going to be like 5 or 10 that are producing the trials. And then, you know.
Oh, yeah. It's a tiny 200 number.
200 or whatever, not.
Yeah.
Right. Doing traffic, but not doing anything for the business. And I bet you if you take it a step further and you have another column for like converted to customers, how many, that number gets a little bit smaller too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But I think, I mean, the way we look at it is like, this is a thing that we can affect, you know, kind of indirectly. But then again, it kind of supports the overall ranking of the site for like what we want our homepage to rank for and what we want all the other like higher intent pages to rank for. So,
right. No, There is value there, and so there's that balance, because you can say I want to focus on all or as much as possible bottom of the funnel content that I know converts, right? And that would be ideal. You write 10 posts, and they all convert. They all bring in a little bit of traffic. Bottom of the funnel usually doesn't bring in as much traffic as the top of the funnel, and you rank really well for them and you're bringing in a bunch of customers that way. But it's kind of hard to do that when you have no, like topical relevance for Google is nowadays more and more of a thing than it used to be. It always was a thing, but they've just gotten a lot better for it. The more authority you can have for certain types of content and for your site to be known for that thing, especially based off of like votes, which are basically links, from other sites to say, yep, here's a good article or something, you know, related to this topic that Google can use and sort of help rank your site. That's super helpful. So there is a balance there.
Yeah. One thing that we are inspired by and are trying to do more of is types of content that show our product solving a problem. Because I think to this point, we've had a fair amount of, this is how to make a podcast, or this is how to do a thing in podcasting. And now we're trying to get more into, this is how you, do a thing in podcasting with Castos. And I look at companies like Ahrefs, and they do this so good. And it is so seamless and natural or organic looking. It's just amazing. Like, I don't know how much of this you guys do, but I think like it's super high buyer intent. It's super relevant. it's super helpful because people are searching for how to do this thing. They have this problem. Your tool solves this problem. It seems like a really natural fit. I don't know if you guys do much of this.
With BidSketch, yes. With DocSketch, we don't even have a blog.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So one of the challenges that because I wanted to approach it that way without having a blog and having a publishing schedule. It's really not necessary nowadays. You just follow a model called topic clusters. HubSpot wrote a really good article just describing how it works. And basically, we go off of what are buyers or ideal customers or, you know, somebody close to that searching for. What's most likely going to work. We focus on just a few of them in the early days. One of them happened to be a tool. And none of them really were like what you would think of as a blog post. And then work really, really hard, spend most of the time promoting that and trying to get that to rank and putting in the work there, because most people do the opposite. They put in all the work on you know, the blog post or whatever it is that they're creating, and then do the minimal when it comes to promotion. Put it like on Twitter, and I don't know. If it's like a tool type thing, maybe a product hunt, and then that's it. They're done with it. And if it's competitive, unless you get lucky, you're not going to get anywhere with it. So if it is competitive, and especially like things that are bottom of the funnel and have buyer intent, they tend to be more competitive. Like what an easy way to tell those is just in Ahrefs, if you're targeting some keywords, just order by the cost per click. And the more expensive stuff is usually the stuff that people that is going to be bottom of the funnel. Typically, not always. People have also they'll do that. They'll find a topic and then automatically write content for it and try to just, which is really an older model of just saying, well, let's create the biggest, best thing for this thing. And I say it's the older model because maybe content isn't what Google thinks people want for that. So really the next step should be, a lot of people skip this step, is looking at what's ranking there right now. And some people do this to see like, oh, I can create some resource that's really great and better than what I'm seeing at the top results. But looking at what's ranking, what Google is favoring will tell you what type of content they want. Maybe they want a free tool. Maybe they want some sort of downloadable, a guide. Maybe they want a product page. They want something really small, because that's the intent that they figured out works, and that's sort of the type of content that you should be creating. If you create something different, it'll be harder to rank that.
How? Oh Jesus! What was I going to ask? Without giving away too much of like the secret sauce, what kinds of things have you guys found successful in terms of promoting your content and getting links and traffic? Again, without giving away the secret sauce, or what would you suggest people try to try to promote their content?
I like to say that I think people should think of these things like kind of like if they wrote a book. You know, when somebody writes a book, they go on podcast tours, they'll do guest posts, they'll basically promote it. But it's funny, when it's content, they don't think of promoting it in that same way. Maybe it's because they put a ton of effort and time into a book and they're like, okay, well, this deserves, you know, a ton of time and effort for me to go promote it. Doing a lot of those same types of things for if it's something that's worth it, right? Like it's content that's going, or you know, tool or whatever, that's going to deliver a good amount of traffic that is relevant and probably going to convert for you as customers. It's worth the time to do all that. Now, I don't have the especially a lot of people too. I don't have the time to write a whole bunch of guest posts, and you know, so I've done a few, but what I tend to do on that side is I'll like pitch some stuff, and then if I get a yes, I'll have a writer write it. So I'll put together an outline, and because I'm a slow writer, it takes me forever. So it would be miserable for me to actually write all these guest posts. I'll just outline it and make sure it's really good, and you know, get it posted out. I've experimented with paying writers to basically handle, you know, and have done that as well. Handle the pitching themselves. Writers don't like to do that. it's hard to get them to do that. I have found a couple that have done that. But basically, that's the sort of approach that I like to take, and I think more people should take. Anything what works really well is like what people think of traditionally as PR. Basically doing that for stuff that you're trying to rank.
Yeah, we had a guest on our podcast a while back that talked about this with kind of relation to their podcast. They have a really, really famous podcast. And he was saying, like, if your content is that good, then the people you're reaching out to will be grateful that you have let them know about this. You know, like, kind of, you're doing them a favor by letting them know about this awesome thing that they can then go share with their audience and look super smart. And I think a lot of us don't like give ourselves that much credit to say, like, holy shit, like this article or this report or this tool or whatever is something that everybody that is interested in this thing genuinely will love. And I think, like, if it's not, you shouldn't be doing the PR or the outreach. And if it is, then you should like pat yourself on the back beforehand and say, like, I'm going to get a lot of no's because these people don't really get it, maybe. But like, a lot of people that I'm going to reach out to honestly are going to think that I'm great for giving them such an awesome resource for free, basically.
Right. And some stuff, it won't work with, because it just doesn't make sense. Let's say Google's ranking, you see that, oh, okay, these are all product pages, you know, or feature pages. It's like a feature page, you know, something that kind of describes, I don't know, let's use BitSketch as an example. Following up on proposals or something like that, right? And it can be a page that really just describes how the product works, and that's what Google's preferring, that's what's going to rank. That's a really hard thing to get anybody to talk about in that sort of way. It just doesn't work. So for stuff like that, two strategies. One is just like create content that is related, that is promotable, that can basically earn the links, and that then links to that page. So you're basically kind of letting all that flow through to that page. The other thing is just do guest posting and then work it into the content that you're writing in a way that makes sense, right? And have a link there, make it just relevant. Like in that case, I'd write a guest post about following up in sales.
So at this point, would you consider like your content efforts successful?
Oh yeah. Even though we don't have a block yet, I call everything that we have, that's generating traffic content, right? Even if it's a tool. So, but I'm most excited about some of the slivers of traffic that we're seeing instead of, so just for some context, we're getting, June, we almost ended with 400,000 uniques for the month. Then we're getting about almost 12,000 signups a month, right? I'm really excited about 500 visitors a month that we're getting from a specific source. I'm also really excited about 1,000 that we're getting from this other source. So I feel like being able to segment and track is a really big deal. Not enough people do it. I had this conversation recently with somebody, and we were talking about attribution and stuff, and they were just trying to get, they're trying to basically understand where their customers were coming from to try and get more of them and significantly grow the business. So I think they were looking at basically looking at like first touch, last touch, and then trying to get a clear picture of like all the different touch points in between. What they were, I feel like that's more useful when you're in the optimization mode. They weren't there yet. They wanted to double their traffic. I feel like it's more important to pay attention to just the first touch, which is what most people track, and get clarity around that and get the actual real story of what's going on. Because just looking at the data, you're going to be misled. You're not going to understand what's actually happening. Like mapping out that buyer's journey is super important. So I an example of this is like with BidSketch. We knew that when we send emails, we get customers. When we stop sending emails, we don't get as many customers. So sometimes we would be able to see, okay, this, hey, that day when we send out this email, we got a little bit more customers. Maybe this topic is really good. Maybe we should write more about that, right? So that's just looking at the quantitative data. So when we did interviews with buyers and mapped out that whole journey, like 30 to 45 minute interviews, like what did you do next? What triggered you to start looking that day? Why that day and not the day before or the day after? Okay, what happened next? Right. Not why did you sign up, or directly asking what triggered it. So this is more like related to the book that's been going around a lot called The Mom Test. Just implement that style of interviewing, but do it for the story of them basically starting to look and finding, you know, evaluating different choices and then picking the right choice, picking your product or whatever. And a really common story for us was somebody had a deadline because, you know, a client needed a proposal. Somebody, you know, they were pitching a new service or something like that, right? And they needed to write a proposal. And there was something different about the proposal than what they, and this, these are the best, the be, one of the, one of the segments that were the best for us. Something was a little bit different than their typical proposal. So they didn't have much time and they needed some help with the proposal. They didn't feel confident about it. They were already on our email list. They remembered that we send them emails all the time. So they, sometimes they would just go into Google, do a search because they remembered our name. So that tracking wise, that would come in as a branded search, but that's not really the story there. Right.
Right. Right.
And, but other people, what they would do is they would search their email. They'd open their email, search their, what was that company? I don't remember their name. Search their email proposal. Ah, there they go. Click through, maybe click through the link on the email. And then sign up that way. That email had nothing to do with getting them to sign up, other than like it was something that helped them remember who we were, right?
Yeah.
And zeroing on just using that data and saying, whoa, we got more signups this day based off of this. This is good content that we should write. Was the wrong thing to do, right? Putting all this data together. So what we do is we take information from those interviews. We have a spreadsheet. We have like their information as far as where did they come from, as best as we know. And then we add to it what we learned from the interviews next to that. And then we kind of pattern match. Oh, okay. When we see this in the data, it kind of means this, right?
And how many interviews are we talking about?
Oof. Depends on how many segments. So typically for BidSketch, DocSketch, we're doing them right now. I think for DocSketch, we're going to have to do some more, but anywhere from like 12 to 15 per segment.
Okay. Or
for the thing that we were trying to do. 20 sometimes.
And a segment meaning like people wanting to do this thing and like searching in this kind of way, coming from this place. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. So for right now, we're focusing on one of the segments that, like I mentioned, I'm really excited about for DocSketch. Yep. That's like 500 visits. So it's zeroing on those. Okay, who came in that way? All right, let's talk to them.
Okay. And so you know where these people came from, and then like you have attribution all the way through to them signing up, so you can go get their email address and reach out and try to schedule this. Yeah.
So the numbers are smaller on that side, right? If we get 500 visits, then it's like how many of those become signups, and then how many of those become customers? So it's not like the 12,000 that we're getting, you know, just in total. And if we just wanted to talk to, you know, to a batch of 15 customers out of those, it would be pretty easy. It is harder when the numbers are smaller. So it's just like an ongoing thing. Okay. You know, email like the ones that came in last week and ask, and then maybe get one interview or two interviews out of that. It's just like an ongoing thing. It'll take time, but it's so worth the time to really get clarity on what's actually going on. And sometimes they can't, with BidSketch, we had this problem. It can be really hard to even know where they're coming from in analytics. Mm-hmm. And for that, like we just resorted to, and it worked really well, just putting, I know it's not the prettiest thing, but putting on the sign-up form, where did you hear about BidSketch? Or what did you hear about DocSketch? That works so well.
Interesting. We do that as a survey in the app afterwards. And we're looking at moving to a different tool called Refiner. Moritz, that was on the show earlier, is able to then like kind of tie those survey results back to a user on our end. So we're able to kind of tell who gave us these answers. So we're looking at doing that to get some like attribution of those survey results to a specific person, so we can go back and reach out to them and say like, you know, one, did they convert? Are they a customer? These kind of things, but also like, we want to follow up to get more information about this. We know who those people are.
Nice. When you say afterwards, at what point, like right after they sign up, or just they're a customer or whatever after for a few weeks, and then you send something out through email, or how does that
work? So it depends. All this is in app. We have done like, where did you hear about Castos? Pretty much right after they sign up, but then we're going to be sending like NPS score on like a certain number of page views or visits or something like that we'll have to kind of trigger manually. Yeah. So that's kind of in the works right now, but because we want to send those after somebody converts or after they've been around for a while. And then like the things you do with those results later is really interesting. Like if it's a good score, then you want to talk to them about that. If it's a bad score, then you want to try to do some different stuff. So that was interesting how Maurice talked about that in our episode. Yeah. You mentioned attribution. I'd love to just hear like a quick version of kind of how you guys do attribution. So I'm sure like it starts with Google Analytics. Mm-hmm. And then like, how do you guys follow the customer all the way through to like actual paying conversion?
Yeah. I feel like it's really, really important to be able to, you know, by these segments, by like traffic source, by ad campaign, by whatever it is that you're doing, be able to know how well are these people activating, you know, performing like the main thing, the main task that the app does, and how well are they converting into a customer? Like this is at a minimum, and then what does the churn look like for them? A lot of people have this lumped in. If you're going to spend some effort, money, whatever, getting more of a from a certain type of source, or some ads are seem to be working really well, you really need to know whether they're churning. Like not in general, not everybody all lumped in together. Whether people that click through this ad are churning really high or low, or what's going on there. You know, whether people that are coming in from these types of blog posts are converting at the same level and churning at the same level, or better, or worse.
So
to do that, we've done it differently for BitSketch and DocSketch, but it's like high level, it's the same thing. Basically, Google Analytics, right, only tells you up to the sign up, and then you need something for event tracking. For BitSketch, we were using Kissmetrics, still use it, but that one hasn't gotten updated in a long time. I think they may be updating it, but Neil Patel bought the site and all that stuff, so I'm just hoping they don't shut that down and we lose all our data soon. We have a ton of years of data in there. But it tells us everything as far as like all you know, every step of the funnel we track. So we know where the drop-off is happening. And we do the same for DocSketch with Amplitude is what we're using there. Now, on the churn side, and we're using more like ChartMogul for that. And for all of these tools, basically, and we do this even if you're not using any of that, the most basic form, if you're just going to have it in your database, is on signup, you insert into your database where they came from. And
the
that's
first
it.
Touch attribution data from right. Amplitude.
Yes. So years ago, this is like 10 years ago or something like that, I saw a talk from the FreshBooks founder, Mike McDermott, I think is his name. He said he was talking about tracking, and people just don't, even back then, people don't do enough of it and they don't understand what's going on. And he said, if you just do this one thing, you'll be so thankful later on. You'll be way ahead of everybody. And this is what we do. What he described was, when somebody visits your site, set a cookie with their referrer. I also add like the first page, that their entry page, right? So if they've never been to our site, set a cookie. And if they've never been to our site, meaning like we don't have a cookie already set for this thing, for a referrer, for the page that they entered in, for a campaign, if one exists, then set those cookies. So we set those. And then when somebody signs up for a trial, or if they sign up, we check, do those exist? All right. Add them to the database, add that information to the database, add that to Stripe. You could add that as metadata. And in ChartMogul, you can set, as soon as you add it to the metadata, it's available for you to send, segment all your metrics in there. Bare Metrics has segmenting by stuff that you send it. And then we set it in Amplitude too, as you know, user level properties, not event level properties. So then from there, you can do all the segmenting that you need.
Cool. That's cool. I mean, that's we're just getting to this point after, I don't know, how long have I been talking about attribution? It's just hard. I mean, it's not that hard, I guess, but it's hard to take the development resources to do this. I know it doesn't take that long, but, you know, we want to go build features and squash bugs and stuff. And I think for me, like convincing myself that, you know, taking a developer some time to do this, instead of building a feature or a bug or something like that, is, you know, maybe a little bit selfish. I should be able to take care of all the marketing stuff on my own. But I think, yeah, this is the kind of stuff that will pay for itself
later,
many times in the long run.
I was really glad to have seen that from Mike way back in the day and have implemented it. He was right. He was 100% right. So it's been so useful since. And it's not that time, like, it can be time consuming. Tracking analytics metric, like people do this, hire people that do it full time. Most of us aren't in that situation, don't have, growth people that are just doing, they're focused mostly on just the analytics side and stuff. But you could do very little, just like I said, like adding a cookie and getting that to the right places. It's really like less than a day's worth of work.
Yeah.
Is what it's, you know, and it's so worth it. I think for a lot of this stuff, we're talking about marketing, content promoting and all that stuff. It's, a lot of people kind of know what to do for some of it. And, it's really making a priority and putting in the time.
I agree. And sticking with it. 'Cause I think it's easy for, maybe I'm projecting here, but it's easy to kind of get on the content bandwagon or get on the attribution bandwagon or get on the promotion and backlink bandwagon, and you do that for a while and then you stop and you go do something else and the shiny object gets in the way. And I think that's where you look at people that have been successful with anything, really, is a big part of it is they just have done it for years and figured out a way to make it work. Because I think almost anything could work in almost any business.
Yeah. Consistency helps a lot. I've been okay with, especially when I'm leading certain things, like I'm leading our marketing effort. I don't write the content and stuff like that. I have contractors that help with that. Especially when we're doing doc sketch, there's so much to do and my focus needs to be on product for long periods of time because there's just so much stuff there. And then I'm okay nowadays with just knowing that, you know what, I'm going to ignore marketing for 3 months, but then I'm going to jump back onto marketing for a full month and do that and ignore product for, you know, as much as I can for that time while I kick off this other effort and then go jump back. Basically, because I'm leading both at this time, but I'm, you know, going to be hiring somebody and changing that soon, but I've done that with BitSketch, did that in the early days and still doing it with DocSketch. It's the reality for a lot of companies that basically don't have specialists to kind of like own or people that can own these areas of the business, right? Like we have to kind do a lot of stuff and focus on a lot of different things. It's really hard to kind of be consistent if you're, for me personally, if I'm focusing on marketing at 30% or 40% and then 60% product, and I'm consistently doing that at the same time, I find that it's just easier to say, I'm okay with ignoring marketing for a few weeks or a few months to make real progress on product and then do the same thing for product. I need to ignore it, focus on marketing.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yeah. I mean, I think on a surface level, it's easy to bounce back and forth, but to, get real work done, to really understand a problem and make progress towards solving it or making it better, I agree. It takes dedicated time, which is just hard to come by. Like good glucose time is hard to come by, and to prioritize it takes like intentionality that I think a lot of us don't have. Yeah. Cool. Ruben, this is a lot of fun, man. Thanks for hopping on to chat through all of this. So docsketch.com and bidsketch.com. Yep. If folks want to check it out. And on Twitter, you are?
I am Earthlingworks on Twitter.
Awesome. Cool. We'll link those up in the show notes. Ruben, thanks so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.